a certain stage, it becomes less about skill and it's more about being open.
Open?
Yeah, to the world, to yourself, to other people. You know, most of the incredible things I've eaten haven't been because the skill level is exceptionally high or there's loads of mad, fancy techniques. It's because it's been really inspired. You
know? I like that.
You can spend all the time in the world in here, but if you don't spend enough time out there,
right?
You know?
All right, welcome back, Analysis listeners. It's radio, not TV, but my guest is pumping his fists. He's got rock hands over the top of his head. He's pumped up. It's Vic Kuligowski from Chicago. Welcome back to the podcast, Vic.
Wow, thank you so much for having me, Bobby. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, man. And today we're talking, you were on season one of The Bear. So we're bringing you back for season two.
Yes,
we're
sir.
Talking season two. It's a Chicago show. You're a Chicago actor. You're a guy that's also worked in hospitality, which also sounds like hospital. There's service happening there, as we learned in season two of The Bear. But you've been in hospitality. And so you know, you're a great person to come and give us some perspective on. And let me start with you. How did you feel about season two?
Wow, great. Yeah. So season two, I loved it. I think let's see how I can say this. As I think the payoff was wonderful, and I love that we get these little subsections. I know we'll get into it, Bob. These little subsections of subplots of characters we didn't know much about in season one. I thought the pacing was a little slow at first, personally, and I was just like, man, because you were in season one getting hit over the head with all this like kinetic energy. And then, you know, you had a year to yourself to think about, well, what are they gonna do next with this? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I think, I'm just going to say it again, I think the way they paced out the season, the payoff was just so worth it. I'll say better than season one, probably like 9.8 out of 10. That's my knee-jerk reaction.
I think this is one of the best shows on TV. It's hard to say that after one season of a show. You can never pound a table and say this is one of the best shows on television. When you get a second one, then it starts to bring that credibility in. I felt a little the same way about White Lotus, which is a show that I talk about all the time on here.
Sure.
It's like any show. And, you know, I think family drama and family dynamics is very much in play. Succession definitely had a very successful ride dealing with family. This is obviously much more grounded, grassroots type of, and honestly, a little more relatable in terms of family trauma. And the show accomplishes a lot. It's very ambitious in terms of dealing with a lot of different things, mental health, family trauma, and anxiety, depression, that all kind of happens around the second season here of them trying to open up a more legit restaurant. It's no longer a sandwich shop. And so you get kind of less of that, what we were praising in season one of like, oh, it's so authentic and front of house and then the terminology. And I remember, and we talked a lot about like, oh, the experience that they put you in was very authentic. You don't get any of that because there's no restaurant until the end. You know, I was also celebrating this as better than season one, not that they need to be compared. I think they complement each other well. But you know, there was an omission of one character that I really despise.
I know, same.
Yeah, there was this character, his name was Angel. He's a dishwasher in season one, a total piece of shit. And every time he was on screen, you know, I just got really angry. And he wasn't in this season, and I was really excited until the very last episode. They had one of those 12-minute trackers. We're moving through the kitchen. We go back to the dishwasher.
Like, there he is.
There's the
like
fucking
big reveal.
I'm obviously kidding. Me and Vic were in a show, Sound the Siren, with a friend of ours who's on the show, Jose Cervantes, who plays Angel the dishwasher.
Shout
got
out
a, got a little bit of extra. He's not able to join us because he's still involved with the projects. But he's in this little taste of Angel there. So I was celebrating my boy as well.
I mean, Bob, it was incredible. It was just like, and I will say, shout out to Jose. He did get bumped up to a guest star nodding on the credits as well, which is a big deal here in Chicago. Right next to acting situation.
Yeah, right next to Oscar winner Jamie Lee Curtis and just overall badass Oliver Platt. So yeah, right in there. Guest star. Well, I mean, it's chock full of stars. You got John Mulaney. You got Odenkirk coming in. Jose Cervantes. Right.
I mean, he's just in the whole mix. And that was kind of where I was going to go next, Bob. I was like, the co-stars on this season and or guest stars on this season, they just hit you over the head and you're just like, they don't even tell you because it was like so under wraps and you're just like, boom. And then you go into, I'm going to jump ahead right now to episode 6.
That's
you were talking about family trauma and anxiety and all this stuff. And people were also just like, and if we remember from last season, I think it was like episode 6, 7 or so when they did the one take. Right. This is, I think, the equivalent on season 2 of that episode.
Yeah, I think every season we're going to get one of these almost standalone, even though it's not a standalone, but just a very ambitious perspective of storytelling. And this time it was a Christmas dinner.
It was a Christmas dinner with just, I mean, like you said, John Mulaney, Jamie Lee Curtis, Odenkirk in there. And then it was just like the way
Sarah Paulson had a really nice scene with Carmi.
I mean, it was just wonderful. And just like to see them interacting and also the way that the film crew was able to get these like very intense kind of like angular shots and like close-ups of like the Feast of the Seven Fishes, which is like such a huge tradition for like Italian families. And then like I always like equate it to like Chicago Italian families like doing Feast of the Seven Fishes like that. And just like how every single person was like, I mean, who hasn't been to a family holiday dinner where all that stuff is going on? And and we get to see a little bit more inside story with Sugar and Carmi and Richie and all this stuff that with that narrative where like in order to go forward in season 2, they went all the way back, which I thought was super, super smart.
I really loved that. It's some of the best filmmaking I've seen this year. TV,
cinema. 100%.
We're in a really great time where we're getting some incredibly impactful television happening. And I just think that was so gripping. It was artistic. It was authentic and real. Like, I mean, I just, like you said, who hasn't been in, whether it was a guest of or within your own family, and you know, the liquor's flowing. You just, it's these kind of marquee moments in the year. And sometimes that's when the pot overblows, no pun intended, with what was happening in that kitchen. And yeah, it informs so much. I really was touched by John Mulaney's prayer that he says.
I was like,
this is so, it felt improvised, did it not?
No, it felt so grounded and natural, Bob, that they were like, I wonder if they just kind of let him go on that, because it was probably next to Jamie Lee driving the car, or maybe even like, I thought it was maybe the most poignant part of that episode where it felt like he was able to kind of suck everyone's energy in and like from an outsider's perspective. I thought it was beautiful. And if that was improvised, I think he at least deserves a nomination for improvisation, because that was just like, he just found the right tone right there. It was great. I'm with you on
I
that.
Look forward to this every year. I love being here. He ties in the sentiment around what bears are, which are, you know, aggressive and can be violent and defensive, but also sweet and mild natured, and you know, and the care that goes in and what we do for each other as a family, and this meal is beautiful, and what that represents. And obviously Donna is Jamie Lee Curtis's character, and she's dealing with if I was gone, if I died, no one would care. And sometimes you can see that in Carmen as well. But just the way he was able to tie all that in. But then you also get the moment of levity where he's like, is he still holding the fork? I pray that he has the strength not to throw the fork. And I was just like, this is so fucking good. This is such good storytelling. I really had goosebumps. I had goosebumps talking about it.
No, same. And it was like, it was one of those things where like I watched it before work and it literally shook me the entire shift. You know what I mean? Because the tension that they built with the fork and with the fact of like, Jamie Lee's mental state, like I felt like something even more serious was about to happen. Do you know what I mean, Bobby? Yeah. It was just like, I thought something,
because you also haven't met her yet, and so you're like,
exactly, you're like, oh my gosh. And then you don't know anything about her in the present, so you're like, is she still with us? That was my first thought. It's like, is she still with us? And I'm like, I don't know. And in that too, it just goes to show like how much Carmi actually cares. Like people were like really looking out for him. And like, that was like something that I never noticed before because he seems like so hard edge and, you know, trying to like push his emotions to the side. But I really saw like how the family was really looking after him. Was it his aunt who was like, you can live in New York.
And yeah, that's Sarah what Paulson. Led
him working. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sarah Paulson saying like,
you've got to get out of here
with us. You need to get out of here. And that's what gets him to 11 Madison Park, which is also really crazy because I'm jumping ahead to the last episode when he sees Joel McHale sitting at the dinner table. And I thought that was so smart because I've worked with chefs who are like, oh my God, is that so-and-so sitting at that table? And then they have this like anxiety-ridden moment of past traumas, which I thought was really cool. But going back to that, that episode articulated so much. It gave us so much more info and made these characters so much richer than we even thought was possible from season one, which I think then set off the rest of the season, honestly. Yeah.
And yeah. There's all these little moments that the show gives you, and this is not, and I'm going to get a little preachy here. I'm going to get a little self-boxing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But don't watch the show on your phone. Because, mm-hmm. honestly, like, it's... There's these little cool moments, these little Easter eggs where in the early parts of the season, as we're kind of getting into the development of the restaurant, and Sugar is sick and like obviously she's pregnant.
Yeah.
And Richie says, do you want a Sprite? And then later the wall falls. It's a bit, but like everyone hears that she's pregnant and he says, I knew it. And then you get the episode six where it's my wife or my girlfriend is pregnant. Can we get her a Sprite? And you're like, fuck, this has been like they played that the whole time. And then obviously Carmi makes the Sprite and it kicks ass. And you know, it's like, that's a really cool little moment. There's another little bit where Fak is trying to entertain one of the city guys, the city ordinance guys. And he's talking about he's talking about punk rock, and it's just in the background. Like there's a scene happening in front of you, but in the background, Fak is just kind of like talking poetically about the song Can't Hardly Wait and how it's this like high school anthem. And, you know, he's talking about like this punk rock revolution. And then at the end of the episode, Carmi is kissing Claire for the first time. And they're playing Can't Hardly Wait. And it's like, oh, this is that high school moment that he never got to have because he went to Europe, right? He goes to Europe, like he bails pretty early. He basically, because of all the family trauma and things, Carmi missed out on a lot of just kind of that like innocent development that we all love and had got to experience and took for granted probably. And so they're playing that song. I'm just like, this is... why we're here. Like this is a show where the storytellers, the actors, like everybody involved is like meticulously crafting an experience for us.
Bob, that's beautiful, because then we get to see Carmi trying to catch up to those moments that he never had, right? Mm-hmm. And we're seeing him like fumble them in real time. Like I'm gonna go off one of your things of talking about, like, I don't even, it's interesting that they're like, oh, we're gonna like make the viewer like memorize something, but then when he gives Claire the wrong phone number, I immediately knew it was wrong. Even though he said the phone number earlier, I was like, mm-hmm. it's wrong. And I'm like, I didn't even memorize that thing. And it's
but that
just
goes
like,
back to Donna, right?
Yes, it does.
I'm in your life. I'm not worthy, right?
Correct.
I'll fuck you up, and so I'd rather just not partake because I have such a low self-image of myself.
Yeah.
And Donna has the same thing, right? I don't want to come into the restaurant at the end because I'm just going to fuck you up. If I come in there, I want you to have this nice thing. Me being involved fucks you up. That is exactly a dotted line right back to him not giving that phone number.
And I'll go back to that point because I thought one of the most beautiful scenes in the season was when she was talking to Sugar's husband outside the restaurant on opening night. And it was just like, because I was wanting more. I was like, where's Sugar's husband? Like they also like shortened his role a little bit more too. But like that was a beautiful scene, which you said connected the dots. It gives you a springboard for season three, honestly, to see what happens.
Well, they're going for the star.
Next.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
So there's a couple of main themes in this season that you're able to track. And it's the first one is every second counts. And that comes back that comes back, and it honestly plays in almost all of our main characters, whether it's the timer in the kitchen, right? That fucking egg timer that keeps going off, and it's like, okay, what do I have to do now? We got to move the pot, we got to put the thing in, we got to put it, but like it plays in, there's always these digital clocks in the new bear that are happening. You know, there's the timer with Marcus and his mom, right? Every moment he has to completely get laser hyper focused on his mom because he's trying to get all of the moments out that he possibly can. And then obviously the moment that he starts to take that energy, and he takes the exact same energy and focus and puts it towards his work, he puts it towards his pastries and his desserts, that's when he starts getting all the text messages, right? And so like that's tragic in a certain way. Then you've got the every second counts with Olivia Colman talking to Richie, and how every second you have an opportunity to reinvent yourself and find your purpose and find a new purpose. So that was something that was in play a lot that I found. And then also just, what is my purpose? What is, I think a lot of the characters in this season were struggling to find and ultimately finding out what their purpose was, whether it's Tina, Sydney, I think, had an amazing arc. My favorite arc of the whole season was Richie's. And then 100%. Carmen, right? Carmen's building his relationship, trying to find his purpose in his life. His apartment is blank. You know, he gets distracted. He takes his eye off the ball. And honestly, like him being caught in the fridge is a culmination of all of that. And, you know, so those were a couple of the main themes that I was.
No. That was beautifully said. I was going to talk about purpose, because I think my favorite actual episode of the season is Richie stodging at Ever. And
what's stodging? I've never heard this term.
Yes.
Is it so just an apprentice? It's
essentially like apprenticing. Like, you can literally go to any kitchen, like anyone. You can be a chef or not. You don't even have to be a cook. You can just be someone off the street, like, I want to stodge here today. And they pretty much put you on the line, and you're doing stuff like Richie. Maybe if you're front of house, you're polishing forks. But if you're back of house, you're probably chopping herbs or something. You're not getting paid. It's like, you just want to see how this place operates. And the place that he chose to go to stage at is Ever, which is like Curtis Duffy's like 3 Michelin star, like crazy, like Alinea type restaurant. Right. And so that's where he chose to go to.
And like, that's in New York or Chicago. I couldn't track where he was. It was in New York. Okay.
No, that's actually in Chicago.
Oh, it's so in Chicago.
It's in Chicago, which I also find interesting too. That this is just like this is just also maybe half hospitality, half acting, is that they used actual restaurants like Noma in Copenhagen or Ever in Chicago, but the chefs were actors. Like, you had Will Poulter like training with Marcus, or you had
another another cameo. Yeah.
Which I thought, we need to bring Chef Luca back, please. That was like, I was just watching and I was like, I had no idea he was actually British. I know, I'm a noob, I'm a nerd. I had no idea he was British.
Most of his stuff, no, he's had an American accent. That was another thing I wrote down. I was like, according to this show, to be a chef, you have to have just like random arm tattoos, not like a full sleeve, but like they all just have these kind of like random, whether it was Poulter or Carmi, or just like, everyone just has like spotty arm tattoos up their arm. But
I don't know why. No. I don't know why that's like I don't know why that is. But then you always see these like cooks, and they're just like, okay, they got like burn marks all over their arms. And then you got like these, like, some tattoos are cool, they're culinarily related. And then there's others that you're just like, yeah, that was a huge mistake. You know what I mean? There's just like all of that over their arms. But I think it's just the culture. I don't know. But going back to your point of purpose, my favorite episode was the Richie episode. And not only because it was like, okay, it was like culinarily accurate and it was really cool to see him in that setting, but it goes back to purpose and like, what is he, right? As an actor, what is he fighting for? Yeah. What is he fighting for? And to see him and to see Oliver Platt be kind of shiesty with that job offer at the Holiday, and then to go back to really try to work on his relationship with his, you know, it was just great to see. And then of course the Taylor Swift scene when he's singing in the car, I was just like, I was like, absolutely, like, it was, I was mixed with emotions, because I was just like, he did it, he won. I was,
but, well, it's,
I
cool mean, because he's constantly trying to assert himself in a leadership position, and
correct
early on, whether it's the mold, no one's listening to me, and then he does it through, honestly, just through volume. He just shouts a lot. And in going to, what was the name of the restaurant in New York that he goes to?
Ever.
Okay. So he goes there, and at first you see him snoozing the alarm, right? He is adverse to the small roles, but in later as the episode progresses, he's up before the alarm. He starts to dress better. He starts to lead quietly, but through his behavior and through his confidence. So by the time you get to episode 10, he's a true leader. He's not somebody that's projecting leadership, but he's actually leading. And, you know, he understands, and the biggest lesson he gets in that experience is how to actively listen to create an experience, which is so cool how the chocolate banana comes back around, because he's not in that conversation. No. Oliver Platt is talking to somebody else and he's just in the room, but that's him demonstrating that skill of, I am actually listening. I do know how to cultivate a tailored experience for you. And that's the shit that's going to get you the star. Even Sydney in her journey, she's told, she's like, your food's obviously going to be great. Like, you've got you and Carmen, and like, your food's going to be great, but you need to have impeccable service. Richie now has the purpose. He has the impeccable service, you know, so that's going to take you. And then also Sugar, she demonstrates in the Christmas party. She's, you know, she's a people person. She loves to serve and to be empathetic and to understand people. And so now, she has her purpose of working in the restaurant. She says to her husband, fuck it, this is my new job now. And I'm good at it and I like it, you know.
I love that, Bobby. And you know what, too? I think that's just, it goes to show, I love that the chocolate banana happened to Oliver Platt, because it was like of what happened in the Christmas episode. And I think that's the true sign of good hospitality as well. It's someone's like, oh, you know, you don't even have to be, like you said, in on the conversation. That's just it. And you make it happen. Doesn't matter. It's just like, let's make it happen. And the fact that he actually is probably one of the most pivotal people in episode 10, because of the fact that he takes over the expo board when Sydney couldn't do it any longer. And so without Richie, that service doesn't get finished.
Yeah.
Doesn't get finished.
That's another little ditty that they set up all season long, was Sydney with the Coach K book.
Yes.
Which was, you know, sometimes you have to be adaptable, and the best offense needs to be able to pivot and do it in real moments. And it's that whole book is about teamwork. She keeps talking about the power of the team. And Carmi's lock, like a lot of the vision and the success for season one was kind of like through Carmen and his expertise, but because he's in a relationship, because he's distracted, and because he's locked in that fridge, it really is the team that needs to do that, to win that service, and they're able to do so, right? And so that's, and I think Sydney understanding, but then delegating to Richie, and he's able to run that board because he has taken the time to improve himself. I think that's a huge piece as well.
Yeah. No, it was, 100%. And then
he's a better leader. Everyone's a better leader. Yeah.
Everyone's a better leader. And everyone's just like at the height of their craft. I mean, and also still thinking on their feet, like when Marcus had to like fire that line cook for like smoking crack or something. It was just like,
Alex Moffat.
Alex Moffat. I was just like, with like the crazy haircut, he's like, I'm in the little like interview montage. And I was just like, wow. It was just like, everyone was working on all cylinders. And I think maybe this is a nice pivot to what I think it all culminates to, really, is the fridge scene. So I want to hear some of your thoughts maybe on that. I'm going to actually throw the question to you, because I think that whole sequence was really interesting, how Claire finds out information and how like Richie and Carmi butt heads at the end, and they're really getting personal, Bob. So I just wanted to hear some of your thoughts on that.
I mean, I think it's a lot of snapping, you know, almost like the way that a rubber band will stretch, and then finally snap. I think those are probably feelings that each one of them have had about each other for a while, and they've been suppressed. And, you know, I do believe that we're talking about specifically Richie and Carmi screaming at each other. Are we talking about the whole thing when it comes to his omission to Tina? And then, okay.
Yeah, I would say all that stuff. All that stuff that is kind of being told through the fridge while there is a physical barrier between them with Tina, with Claire, with Richie. I just thought that was a really cool device that they used.
Yeah. And then shot, the two shot, which I don't know if they were filmed separately or if that was some sort of production design. Yeah. But I thought that was a really cool shot. And you got the two different colors. Cool. You've got the... I think just cinematically, when he's getting broken out of the fridge and you see the sparks coming through and it's just lit really well. Yeah. I just thought it was just a really pretty picture. But I think to me, it shows that Carmi is critical, but not necessarily the only thing that's needed to make that successful. And I think the team now realizes that. There was a great metaphor, an episode before, I believe it was in the omelet episode, where he can't fix the table by himself. And so Sydney comes underneath and they're fixing the table together. And they kind of realize in fixing the table, we need each other to make this work and we help each other. But I think Sydney does that smile at the end because she knows she's capable of doing it on her own now if she needs to. And so maybe that's going to free up some space for Carmi to be able to actually like to have a full life instead of just a good life a successful life in hospitality. And I think that's where we're going. But, you know, obviously that comes with a lot of fear. And so right now he's in a fear zone and he's expressing it to Tina and unknowingly expressing it to Claire that that type of life is something he's uncomfortable with. He's clearly been uncomfortable with for a long time and he's going to need to continue to grow through. I think she'll be back. I think he'll be able to kind of do an apology, if you will. But I think, I thought that was, you know, heartbreaking in a way, because you're really rooting for him to find happiness. And then I think the Richie conversation, I loved the fact that he, even in those moments, and he's really, Carmi's really spinning venom at Richie, and he's in a really low place. He's just lost his girlfriend. I don't know how he feels about the restaurant being successful with him being locked away for the evening. But even in all of that, Richie's saying, I love you. And he's like, I'm the one that has to tell you this. And, you know, he's kind of taking on the role of Carmi's brother and how Carmi's brother, you know, is putting him in. Every time Carmi gets pushed out of his comfort zone when it comes to that relationship, whether it's at Christmas, whether it's, you know, later in the season, you know, he reacts kind of violently with it. And it goes back to the bear, right? It can be aggressive and violent at times. Ooh, it can also be sweet and sensitive. And so, you know, it's I love you. And there's some really hardcore shit that's said in there that I think they're going to have to work on mending. You're obsessed with our family. You know, you're a piece of shit. I help you pay for your daughter. Well, at least I have something, you know, at least I have a daughter. You have nothing. You push everybody away. I mean, there's some really, really tough things that are said in that scene. But I think just that family erupts a lot. And then you see the duality of the bear, right? You're going to see that. And you're also going to see the sweet, sensitive and caring side. And I believe Richie, and Richie's not going anywhere, right? He's just found his purpose. And he's valuable. The team needs him.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. So that's how I feel. I don't know if I answered your question or
not. No. You answered it beautifully, though. You answered it beautifully because there's these moments where, like, when Carmi kind of does the thing with Claire and, like, she finds out all that stuff, it's like he's justifying the fact why he never had a girlfriend before or a partner before in any of this career. It's like, see, I told myself so. But really, he needs someone like that because you hit on a great point of having a fulfilled full life, right? And I think that's what he's kind of fighting for. And it's not just about a restaurant, or it's just like, it's not just about, okay, like, you're an artist all the time. It's like, no, in order to make great stuff, you need to experience like this full life. So yeah, it was super, super heartbreaking. And the fact that they got personal with one another, it's just like you said, it's love. It's because they love and they care for each other. And the fact that like they're in this situation and that their journeys have like kind of like come to different ends. Like, I feel like Richie's like on the up and like Carmi's on the down. So it was just like, yeah, it was just volatile. And you answered the question beautifully. I guess, is my point.
That's all I wanted was the affirmation. But I appreciate
it. There you go.
But I, here. I obviously, I really enjoyed the show. I enjoy this type of storytelling. There's also just something very authentically Chicago about it. I think 100%. Chicago is its own little character. Like we said the season before, but you just her walking around, they show like actually show the schoolyard closing. They show these different things. Yeah. It's like, oh, I've been to these places. There's a lot of traveling about the city that I thought was really cool. And then the actors they decide to use. I remember season one, improv comedy legend, Mick Napier, he runs the Annoyance Theater. And if you guys are looking to bump into somebody, if you're in the Chicago area and you're looking to bump into people that were on The Bear, you could just head on down to the Annoyance because a lot of people hang there. A guy I knew, he was part of Blue Co. My friend Greg Ott, who's a friend of the podcast here, played with him. His name's Danny, but he was in the party scene when Claire drags Carmi to the party. He's in that scene, but you know, Odenkirk is a Chicago legend. You've got John Mulaney, who I don't know if a lot of people know. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But like he's a Chicago guy. He was raised.
He's a Northwestern guy. Yeah.
Northwestern guy. Yeah. So they use a lot of Chicago talent in the show as well. Obviously, Jamie Lee Curtis isn't, but I just thought she was awesome.
She was brilliant.
Yeah, so I mean that makes me feel warm and fuzzy, you know, my affection for everything about the city of Chicago besides the sports teams, which is why I like the show, because they don't deal with any of the Chicago sports teams, but all the other cool parts of the city. So
though I will say that I will bounce off because I do have a Cubs hat on. There is a Bartman reference, a whole Bartman monologue.
Yeah, shit,
so
he does.
I will call you out on that because
that is like, true.
Remind me what the analogy that Oliver Platt was trying to tell Jeremy Allen White in that situation.
He tells him not to lose focus, which is a theme, because Alex Gonzalez takes his eye off the ball. Everyone blames Bartman, but really it was the 9 millionaire assholes that took their eye off the ball that blew the game. And so he says, don't take your eye off the ball. And that's when he starts, that's when the seed gets planted where it's like, maybe I shouldn't be in this relationship right now. And then he keeps the fridge. He keeps fucking missing the fridge. He keeps Sydney's doing everything on her own. You know, she has this sense of loneliness and doubt because she's got to hire the staff. She's got to curate the menu. She's got to, you know, do everything. Then she doesn't get looped in on major decision makings. You know, that's a big part of it. And then, you know, of course he gets trapped in the fridge that he never was able to focus on fixing. And so, you know, basically the Bartman, the Alex Gonzalez bit was, you know,
that was it.
Focus and make the play, even though you're under pressure.
Yeah. That was it. So I will have to say there was one sports rep. Yeah, it was like at least like a 5 minute. Like,
yeah, he really,
like, oh my God, he really got into that.
I was like, I don't think we need all the play-by-play of the 05 ALCS, like, whatever.
Was
it 03 ALCS?
It was, yeah, it was. And it was just like, that felt like a little, like, if I had to, like, that felt a little on the nose for me a little bit. But maybe it was just like, okay,
yeah.
But it was still like, really
yeah,
cool.
Let's talk a little, because we've been praising here for, you know, 20 something minutes, but I do think sometimes, I don't know, I'm going to sound like a jerk.
No.
I think the self-righteousness of the importance of restaurants, to me, I get a little eye-rolly at. Like, this is as important as hospitals. It's like, no, it's not. Nurses and doctors keep people alive. You guys are making someone have a nice night on their anniversary. Like, yes, I get it. Like, it's you are creating an experience and you need to have a passion for it the same way that people have a passion for anything that they do. Like, I agree with that. But like, sometimes it's a little fart smelly, like smelling your own farts.
100%.
To like the power of what we're doing here. And so like, I think it's done better when it's Donna and her dinner table, and it's like, this is this act of service and love that I'm giving to you guys.
I think
it's done better there than like the guy in when he's, was it Stodging? When he's like, you know, this is the Super Bowl every day, and you know, we're going to make someone's life with this experience. And it's like, okay. Eye rolly to me.
No, of course, especially in those like high end places where it's just like, it's really a classist thing as well. Like only certain people in this world are going to be able to experience that. And of course you're going to experience something great because you're paying like $500 a person for a person at a place like the place he was staging at. So it's like, I'm totally
probably
with
more than
you.
500. It's... Yeah. Oh, so I don't know. Gosh. Just it felt a little self-righteous. It felt a little self-righteous on when it comes to restaurants. I'm also not a big restaurant person. I think that's sometimes the tough part about any sort of show, whether it's that's food related, whether it's Top Chef or Man versus Food or a show like this, is you can't smell it and you can't taste it. And so, you know, there's two kind of core senses that go into the dining experience that you don't have here.
I love that. And I'll bounce off of that idea too, of the fact that it's like, yes, it's eye rolly, but unfortunately, like, that shit is true as fuck. Like, in restaurants, of like people being self-righteous, it's like, that is true. And but you have every right to eye roll, because I eye roll too. It's just like, okay, what are we doing here? At the end of the day, everyone's eating the same thing. You're literally just, I don't know, you're making noodles. You know what I mean? Like, if we
break
it down in layman's terms, it's cool. Yeah. But yeah,
it's not the same as a hospital. It's not the same. That's all I'm saying. It's important, and I get it that people love it, and it's going to be. And I've been to social gatherings where people have gone to an incredible restaurant or a very popular restaurant, and it's like something that they talk about with passion and pride, the same way I talk about going to an incredible sporting event. And you know, it becomes a part 100%. It becomes a part of your narrative, and so like I get it that it's important, but anyway.
I'm with you on that. No, you're good.
Great show.
Great show. Probably, like you said, one of the best shows on television I've seen in a long time. Honestly, very excited for season 3, but I can also say, and we're going to obviously talk for season 3, I just can't see the show going more than season 3.
No, I think it
don't need any more.
Mm-hmm. I agree just with you. Thought. My question for you for season 3, because you said we had a year to sit there and kind of think about what's going to happen next and where the story is going to take us. They have a slow zoom on the ticket stop coming in. And we also saw we saw somebody talking about the schedule, the reservations after the first couple weeks having nothing on the books. And so, how do you feel this is going to go? Do you think it's going to be a success? Do you think they're going to get the star? Where are you at?
I think they're going to get the star, but that's me being an optimist. I think they're going to get a star, but then I'm also thinking with my actor/brain, what's going to make this more interesting? Of course, you're going to get the star, right? But what they've done really well is give us ideas that are not conventional, right? Like, they give us these storylines that aren't the straight path. Yeah. I think that's what makes this show great. I don't know what's going to happen. Sustaining a restaurant, as we know, is a very difficult thing to do, especially in a fine dining setting. I would love to see them. I guess I would like them to succeed, right? Like, I don't want them to go through this entire journey and it just like fail. But so the fight's got to be twice as hard. And I need what season 2 didn't give me up top. I need the pace to be hitting over the head up top of season 3. That's just my wish. And maybe for season 3, you don't get 10 episodes. You get 7 or 8. And you really hit it over the head. This is me just speaking in vague generalities because I haven't sat down and thought about what I want to see in season 3. But if we're saying this is the last season of The Bear, it needs to hit really hard. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, and this is where television has gone now. There's not a hyper focus in 12 season. Let's run this as far as we can. It is. And I think a lot more talent is signing on because it's a shorter commitment. It's more succinct storytelling, more impactful storytelling. And it's, we're not trying to stretchy. There's these like weird fan bases that are the only ones left on there. So it's, I do think that it has runway for one more season. We have to find out what happens. Almost if you're looking at it as a play, it's like a 3-act play, right? Act 1 is sandwich shop and, you know, finding this group of people and we're getting some context in terms of how they all relate to each other. Act 2 is the tear down and the rebuild of the restaurant. So now we've got the bear here. And then act 3 is going to be the conclusion, right? The falling action. We're gonna start to you know, wrap up where we're going here. And I think, to me, I've already kind of laid out some of where I think Carmen's going, but I think he's going to step away. I think he's going to have a better work-life balance. If
okay. If,
you know, but no, I think
that's great.
Yeah, I think he's going to be out of the kitchen, I think, by the end of season three. I think Sydney is going to realize her full potential, and I think she's going to become the protege she's been trying to be the entire season. I think there's a relationship situation happening with her and Marcus that'll probably get realized. And then I think, I think Richie's going to figure out with his family, but I think he's going to finally find his purpose. I think he's going to see his self-confidence, and I think he'll be accepted into that family. I think it'll be like a more of a, you know, him less of a barrier between him and the family.
Well, that's anyone listening right now, bring Bob Pantalone to write the third season.
Well, they wrote the first two, so they laid it out. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm going with it. But
no, that's great.
Whatever the case, I hope it continues to bring really, really strong writing and performances to my stream app. So
yeah.
Well Bob,
it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, dude, this was
like
great.
Always, man. This All is right. awesome, man.
I think you've
great
been on. I think
day.
You've been on three times. So two more, and you get yourself a cartoon here. So keep chipping away, buddy.
Awesome.
And appreciate the audience for listening. Thank you, guys. Don't forget to smash the subscribe button like you smash a burger in the kitchen. Okay, subscribe. Don't forget to treat each other with respect, and we will see you down the road. Corners, Chef. Thanks, Chef.
Bye.
Here we go.
Start.